Hello and welcome to Q&A Quest, episode 404. I was going to make a episode not found joke, but instead this episode is entitled Eat Shit, Microsoft. And with me as always,
fastest cowboy in the West, Stephen Ferney, Family Minister.
Enjoying a break from the heat, your man in Japan, Michael Baker, and Gaiji Monogatari.
And this is Smokin' Joe Gamer.
I thought his name was Saga Joe Gamer this whole time.
I don't have a bit prepared.
I look like
sorry.
An idiot.
Oh, it's Fire Runner. I just noticed Fire Runner's comment in the chat. Any comment on the Xbox layoff? Is Microsoft ready to retreat from the console market?
We're going to have a lot of discussions.
I'm going to be swearing a lot this episode.
Well, I want to preface this by saying that for Wheels to get angry at Microsoft, that's like anyone else being like absolutely livid. Like, it takes a lot to get him to turn on Microsoft.
And turn I have. I am going all in on...
Warm turn.
Well, I would say I'm going all in on PlayStation. That's a lie. I've always been all in on Switch and everything else is secondary. But my secondary console is now the PS5 and not the Xbox.
I was going to make a joke that you were going to call for the year at the Linux desktop, but...
Linux, you say?
I'm Googling year of the Linux desktop again. When was the first year of the Linux desktop? I'm glad that when I Googled year of the Linux desktop, I got a Reddit thread. When was the first year of the Linux desktop from 10 years ago?
Oh, Lord.
Well, that's why Microsoft does these things, because it's like, what are you going to do? Switch to Linux?
Throw your vote away.
Yes, actually.
Apparently, 1998 was the first year of the Linux desktop.
Wow.
27 more years! 27 more years!
The thing is, when I tried Linux when I had an AMD graphics card, there were plenty of games that ran. Some of them were a little screwy, but... You know, a lot of stuff was playable, but then when I tried it again with an NVIDIA graphics card, it's just a nightmare to get drivers to install, and then everything was all fucked up.
And somehow it's still better than gaming on a Mac.
Yes.
that shit's fucking over.
I mean, my Mac Mini with the M2 chip, it can run Civilization 6 just fine, can't run Civilization 7 to save its life.
You can play Civ 7 on your Switch too.
Yeah, I need to buy that upgrade pack.
I need to look into how much that costs.
Well, I want to say if you buy a Switch 2 physical copy of that, it's just a code in a box.
It is.
So you got to buy the Switch 1 version and then buy the upgrade separately.
I have the Switch 1 cart, so I will just buy the upgrade pack.
There you go. Great job.
I appreciate that they actually put out an upgrade pack, which is not guaranteed. Okay, I'm just going to put it on and see when it goes on sale, because Civ games go on sale.
It's just like, I've been meaning to play that more, but it's like, so far I don't like it enough to buy two copies, at least not until there's a lot more like expansions and stuff.
Yeah, I'm just putting it on the wish list, and then I'll pick it up when I feel like it.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's just different, and I just haven't fully learned the ins and outs of it yet.
Something that keeps fucking me over is the Switch 2 is much better at telling me when something on my wish list has a is on sale.
Yeah. It's also got a new feature that can recommend games based on your preferences.
Yeah, it like refreshes every week, and I don't know, it seems like it might actually be pretty decent. We'll see where it goes, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, no, today I picked up Wolfenstein the New Colossus, which is $6 as of this.
It's wow. Ridiculous. If I didn't already have it, I would have bought it right away.
Yeah, it's currently $6 on everything.
Yeah, that one lets you kill Hitler. Wow.
Yeah. I just watched the GDQ run of Wolfenstein 2 the New Colossus.
Oh, nice. How fast is that?
That was about an hour. I believe the estimate was an hour, and the actual runtime was like 52 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Well played.
Yeah, no, it's a fun run. Like, Wheels is playing Fire's Emblem.
Engage.
Engage.
Okay, so who wants to talk about what they've been playing before we start tearing into Microsoft?
Well, I have officially given up the previous game I was playing.
Oh, rip.
Yeah, it got to the quote-unquote open section. But, I mean, it actually stated this is the open part of the game, you can go wherever. And it's like, okay, there are six different important locations I need to visit in order to, like, it's got a Zodiac theme for the summons. I've got half of the summons, I need to get the other six. But each of these locations, when you get there, is fronted by a boss battle with at least one form of the summon. And these are not easy battles. These are, like, incredibly not easy battles. And the actual rate of experience and skill point gain at this point in the game is not keeping up, to say the least.
Oh.
And so, and when I say tough, and it's like boss for the Scorpio Temple has seven forms.
Oh.
But the first two are not actually weak against anything and resist like five things. So you have to punch through both of these forms sequentially using one magic spell that will actually not get resisted and give you a demerit on the point side. Because hitting elemental weaknesses is actually a rather important part of this game's strategy. And now it's giving me bosses that don't have weaknesses.
Oh.
So it's like, for this thing, you're supposed to break through its shield. It takes two forms for this. And then four more forms where it's weak against fire, but it's getting sequentially stronger hitting. And then a final form where you can just whack it to death with swords, which is good because by that point, you're going to be, well before that point, you're going to be out of it, mana. The thing is, the first two forms, where you're not even gaining anything from elemental weaknesses, comes to somewhere between 40 and 50,000 hit points.
That sounds like too many.
Yeah.
That's and a lot of hit points.
And then I can't remember what the next one I went to was, but the one after that was Capricorn, and that one only has two forms. I got through the first form, it switched to a different elemental weakness, and I was trying to get through that one, and then it starts pulling out the hit everyone non-elemental damage attacks. And there's just no way to keep up because the, like I said, the skill point gain is very low. It's like literally based on how many monsters are in a battle for regular battles. So, if I can properly farm rats down in the very first level of the game, it might take me a couple hundred battles to level up properly at this point. So it's it was just not turning out very well. Yeah. And again, this is the game where, like I said, hitting elemental weaknesses is a major part of the battle strategy. But obviously it really helps to know what you need to be hitting first. And all of the bosses are immune to scanning.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. And there's a character class that actually gives class abilities. I went and bought used up skill points to buy all these class abilities out, where it can inflict weak points on enemies. Except, again, for some reason, over 90% of all enemies in the game are immune to this.
What's even the point?
I mean, I had to search it up, and it's like, apparently there's one boss in the game where you actually have to rely on this on this ability set to beat it, and everything else, it's pointless. So it's like, okay, this game is an ever-climbing tower of four design decisions based around interesting concepts. And it's just getting worse and worse and worse. So. This doesn't look good. So now I'm just planning out a deep look because I didn't get quite far enough to justify a review, and it's just, it's not going to be a happy, it's not going to be a happy write-up.
Well, that's a shame.
Yep. I mean, I'm pretty sure about half of it's just going to be me critiquing the battle system, but there's other things to critique about this game. It's just that the elemental weakness system in the battle system is, like, the biggest thing.
Non-ideal.
Well, that and the hit point totals for bosses. And even before I got to this point, there was a sandworm boss that I had to beat. It was a 3-stage battle, probably about 70,000 hit points total, and I just could not finish off the third form. So I ended up bringing in a summon. Actually, I brought in several different summons over the course of this battle just to see if what would work, and finally brought out one that turned out to be Earth Elemental, and you can't actually tell what the element of the summon is before you summon it because none of that information is given in the menus. You just have to remember which one's which. Yeah, so, but finally I managed to pull out the one that is also Earth Elemental and absorbs Earth Elemental attacks and just had her whack the thing to death with a spear for approximately 50,000 hit points worth of battle, where she was doing, total average, maybe 1,000 points of damage per hit. Like, this is not the sign of a well-balanced game. Where it feels like I'm cheesing the battle, while at the same time I am completely bored by it. Yep. Oh well. Gotta keep practicing my rants for writing this thing. But yeah, moved on to something a lot more interesting, a lot more fun. Is what it is. Actually, you know, what was the name of the title of the game here? In Stars and Time?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I've heard of that.
This one's cute. I'm getting the vibe of like a late aughts webcomic from this. Fun. Up to and including the party mascot. As you've got four party members, but then you also have this random, like, 10-year-old girl or 10-year-old chaos gremlin of a child, half-feral child, who's just following you around, and in order to make them feel better, the party has declared that they're the snack leader. So occasionally in battle, they will just run in and either whack the enemy with a frying pan or provide snacks for everybody.
Nice.
This is funny. This is fun. It's also got the weirdest game timer glitch I've ever seen. It's fun.
Hooray! I love weird glitches.
Oh, Dave, you'll like this one then. You know how a lot of Switch games, or games that get ported to Switch, they can't deal with sleep mode very well for the timer? So the timer just keeps going while it's sleep mode? This game currently says I have 200 hours on the clock.
Oh, your favorite game by far.
Thing is, I started it last Thursday afternoon.
Well, you've been hitting it hard. That doesn't math at all.
I've been hitting it so hard. The funny thing is, the game itself, the plot of the game, it features a time loop.
Oh my god.
I guess you're just playing it true to life.
Yeah, so I'm like, okay, so the game itself is experiencing a time loop. Where it has somehow been played for 8 consecutive days when it's only been maybe 5. Or 4 going on 5.
Yeah, it's, yeah. Okay. That's dedication.
you love it so much, enjoy. You went back in time to play more of it.
Sometimes that's just what you crave. Wheels, what have you been playing other than Fire Emblem Engage?
Engage. Excuse me a moment.
Engage.
There we go.
You stopped using that sound, right?
I can't. Can't do it. I have been playing Cyberpunk.
How's that going for you?
Very good. Now that I know that finishing
fucked up arms yet.
Now that I know finishing the expansion will be the end of the game, I went and did some other quests for a while bouncing back to that. And it's been fun. And I got the talking gun, and it's the shit.
You love Skippy.
Skippy is incredible. He seems disgusted at all the shooting I'm doing, but hasn't stopped.
Why do you need... Why do you need to kill more than 50 people?
Oh, Skippy.
Oh, did you put him into pacifist mode or mass murder mode at the beginning?
In pacifist. It seemed like the better choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that gives you the option of pacifist or mass murder when he gets to 50. That my horse ran headlong into a river and died.
What?
I've been playing Red Dead Redemption.
Okay.
I was going to say, are you playing Uma Musume or what? I hope not.
I don't think they can do that in Uma Musume.
Yeah. I was like,
able to. I don't know.
That's been the main horse themed game I've been seeing all over social media recently. So I'm like, wait a moment. What?
That doesn't sound like me at all.
Yeah. Well, that and ran into a river and died. I'm like, wait a moment. That doesn't.
That would be an incredible. Like, I would be so much more enthused. Okay. Why is
I was going to say. Also been playing Final Fantasy IX.
Yeah, for its 25th anniversary.
No, just because I've been playing lots of Final Fantasy.
For its 25th anniversary.
Yes, for its 25th anniversary. I totally didn't... Totally realized it was its 25th anniversary.
You did that on purpose.
Yes. That is... All of this is true.
Wheels is a person who thinks before doing things.
It's true. It's damn true.
Stop that horse wrestler.
But yeah, the remaster that still looks incredible. It's beautiful, very impressive. Game. Yeah.
Wish it didn't have that awful mobile game UI, but we can't have everything.
It's fine.
It's bad, but it does let you speed up, which is the game's biggest flaw, so it's impossible to say if it's bad or not.
But yes, it's spending my time with good old Vivi. But also,
yeah, good friend Vivi.
Fire Emblem Engage.
Engage.
Engage. Yes, randomly heard someone badmouth it on a podcast, and I was like, that's bullshit. I'm going to go play some Engage.
Was it one of our podcasts?
No, it was not.
Okay, good.
So then I've been playing that, and it is very good. Because Fire Emblem Engage is very good. As long as you aren't looking for a story as good as Three Houses. Because obviously it is not. But I don't give
it's
a shit.
Okay for, it's okay for there to be different Fire Emblem games. That yes. Different, for like different things.
But
and more fans should learn to understand that nuance.
Yes.
You will get your story, like, there will be a Switch 2 Fire Emblem probably before this time next year that is a Three Houses style Fire Emblem.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I want that.
That would be my suspicion.
Yeah, but this game feels a lot more like the 3DS games to me, which means I like it more than Three Houses.
Ooh, spicy.
Wow. That's a hot take.
Yes, I was not a huge fan of many.
That's spicy meatball.
Combat in Three Houses and the story, both great. The other systems, did not care for. Did not care for tea parties. Did not care for the relationship system in that game. Did not care for the school setting. Shockingly.
Wow.
And that's fair
enough. Yeah. I was a bit disappointed that Byleth just ends up with that one girl, like, no matter what you do, I think.
That is not true.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but also that is not true.
Well, maybe, all right.
Yeah, whatever you think is happening is not what happens.
No.
All right.
There are a bunch of different endings to that game.
Well, because I got to the end with the blue lions, and then it was like, oh, he ended up with the hot teacher, and it's like, oh, I didn't. I mean, it's not that I don't like her, but I thought I was going to end up with like Annette or somebody. Oh well. Anyway.
So what are you even playing, Joe?
I'm playing Tetris. Right now. No. Oh, God, no. Hattress.
You considered playing Wordtress?
No. What is that?
Play Welltress.
There's good old Welltress.
All right, well. There's a
How
lot
do you feel about
of
Tetris?
I don't know. I happen to like NES version. Regular Game Boy version, I think, is hot garbage. I liked it at the time, but most Game Boy games are just bad. The Game Boy Color version is quite good. So I've been playing the NES version, I've been playing the Game Boy Color version. Right now I'm playing the original Game Boy version. I don't like it. And I was playing a little bit of Tetris Effect Connected, which is kind of neat. You know, you get like trance music and psychedelic visuals while you're playing. It's pretty cool. I have played the Genesis version, and it's odd. At one point, one of the backgrounds is Stonehenge. It's weird.
Yeah, there's some weird backgrounds in that.
I've been playing some. I don't know, just been playing Tetris a lot. And hang on. Last night we were playing Mario Kart World again. That's always fun to jump into. And I played Mario Strikers for the first time on GameCube, and I eventually got a little bit better at it, so that was fun.
It's a neat game.
And we didn't have horrible input lag like we did with Soul Calibur, so that was nice too.
I think that might have been partially down to being a one-to-one connection instead of three people connecting.
Yeah, could be. So, and then I've been playing Tears of the Kingdom, and just been spending a lot of time just farming monsters to try to upgrade armor pieces. So I've been trying to get some Lynel guts, and Lynels are a pain, and they don't always drop their guts.
They're bastards.
Yeah, like especially there's a silver maned Lynel. Ugh. You know, so like I upgraded the Hylian.
Lynels.
I got the Hylian gear fully upgraded, which required like Hinox guts. And I'm at the point where Hinox, like a black Hinox, I can take out in like 10 seconds, not even hard. But once you fully upgrade each piece, it's 20 each. So with 60 defense and even eating a meal that gave me extra defense, the white main, silver main Lynel just kills you. You just can't get hit, basically. He's got a lot of hit points, so you end up. Yeah, and like you can have a shield with like 70 defense, he'll break it in 3 hits. It's awful.
Rip.
And then also just, you know, you have the taluses because they can drop diamonds sometimes. I haven't found a good spot to farm for star fragments, but I don't think there is one. I think you just get lucky when you're flying. But I've also just been exploring the underworld a lot and got a bunch of new light routes, and I finally just caved and bought all 3 pieces of the Firebreaker armor so I can wear that underground and, you know, in the hot areas near, like, the Fire Temple. And then I got the Snowquill gear, and I got the Zora gear. So at this point, I did all four temples, and I just talked to, what's her name? Petra, or I forget her name. But I talked to her, and then and now it wants me to go to Hyrule Castle, and I'll do that when I feel like it. So there's that. And let's see here. I got this new PC game called Tempest Rising, which is like a spiritual successor to Command & Conquer. And they even got the same composer. So I really like the music, and just the overall look and feel is very similar to the old Command & Conquer games, but obviously with better graphics. So I started out just wanting to do a skirmish match with each faction. There's two factions right now. I think you unlock a third if you beat the game or something. But one faction plays very much like GDI, and they're fine. I put the computer on easy, and it wasn't very easy. But eventually I had a whole fleet of bombers, and I was able to just take out the construction yard, and then I guess that was the winning condition that I set. So it's like, oh, cool. But then I did another match with the other faction, which is pretty much Brotherhood of Nod, and it was basically a stalemate. I spent the whole time playing defense and then just gave up because I had to stop and get ready for Q&A quest to start. So yeah, I played on what they call easy, and it was not easy, but that's just skirmish matches. I can still do the campaigns and stuff, so I'm looking forward to jumping into that, actually. That would be nice. I think that's... Yeah, I don't have anything... Any other new games. I've been streaming Visions of Mana for RP Gamers, so you can check that out on Tuesday and Thursday nights, 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. Eastern Time. That's my slot that they gave me. So yeah, I've been doing Visions of Mana. I just got to chapter 4, I think, or something, but some really messed up things happen in chapter 3. So yeah, I really want to see where this goes because, like, you know, the overall just tone of the game is very nonchalant about, you know, the fact that they have to sacrifice themselves to the mana tree, and the mana tree doesn't seem like a very benevolent entity, you know.
Mana.
Yeah. So right at the start of the game, there you play as that guy, and his girlfriend gets turned to stone because she's an alm, and he doesn't want to bring her to the mana tree, and then his whole village gets destroyed. And then he pops up, and I'm like, oh no, I don't trust that guy, and I don't want to spoil it, but there's a guy.
Seems like he's right early on.
I know. You know, he's very angry, and I understand why, but I don't know what he can do that's not going to jeopardize every other person on the planet. So it's just very odd. And I feel like a jerk when I play it, though, because the monsters are adorable, and I feel bad about killing them all.
Well, maybe it's the children who are wrong.
No. It is the children who are wrong. Yeah. So that's been fun, and I did start the Pokemon Scarlet second DLC. Didn't get very far yet. But you go to this area that has like four different biomes, and it's underwater. Under the sea. Homer, that's your solution to everything. There'll be no accusations, just friendly crustaceans under the sea.
We need to stop. We need to move forward.
Dude, you're trying to get Disney on our asses?
Well, does Disney own the Simpsons now?
Yes, they do.
Oh, okay then. Well then, I thought it was just on Disney Plus.
No. They bought all of the Fox shit except the news.
Oh,
so they bought all the stuff that wasn't shit.
They bought King of the Hill and Family Guy and.
Yep.
Bob's Burgers. Wow. Yep. Well, I mean, I noticed that all of the Hulu stuff was showing up in Disney Plus now, and I didn't know that was somehow related.
Yeah, Disney essentially owns both.
So Disney increased their monopoly even more. Wow.
About 6 years ago, yes.
Okay.
I will briefly talk about whatever bullshit I've been doing. So I booted up Red Dead Redemption because I got a bee in my bonnet about that for some reason. It's a good cowboy game. I shoot thing with gun and also sometimes get in High Noon Duel. I don't know. It's an interesting game. It's
High Noon. Yeah.
No. Banned. It's about as morose a game as they could be, which is befitting anything about the death of the Old West, which is to say most Westerns. But I've been enjoying it. It's a game that I think personally sort of lives and dies by its atmosphere. But it has a good atmosphere. It has a solid imitation of a Morricone spaghetti western score that also has a decent capacity to dynamically switch. There's some fun atmospheric set pieces. I think earlier today I was doing one where you go down a mine shaft and you're it's all misty and dark, and occasionally you shoot something that explodes and it feels good, and then you ride a minecart out. That's fun. So I've been enjoying that. I just sort of decided to. I think by your number of missions, I'm probably a third to halfway through. So I'm making decent progress on that. Other than that, I randomly played a bit of East Eoth and Fel'Ghana because it's East Eoth and Fel'Ghana. I don't need further explanation.
No, you do not.
I might play some Origin as well, since that was like $6. And I didn't have it on Switch, so it's like, yeah, why don't I own East Origin on Switch? Why don't I? And then I went mad with power. Played a bit more Bakeru and Penny's Big Breakaway. Both of those are a lot of fun. A lot going on. A lot of stuff going on. And a copy of Tony Hawk's 3 Plus 4 is downloaded. Ooh. Will not let me play it.
No, not till the 11th, right?
Yep. But it's sitting on there. Like, I saw that, like, yep, that is taking up like 40 gigs on my on my Switch 2. I am ready to do a kickflip. Let's see.
I was gonna say I did try the trial of Penny's Big Breakaway. It didn't click with me.
It takes a bit of getting used to because it's got a lot of Penny has like a weirdly complicated moveset, and a lot of the appeal of the game is learning to use that into continual flowing motion.
Yes. So I don't know. It just didn't click. I mean, the whole time I'm just thinking to myself, like if there had been a 3D Sonic game on like the Saturn in this kind of style, I think I might have liked that. And of course they are the same team that did Sonic Mania. So I mean, I would say I'm glad that they did their own thing. I respect that, and you know, I'm glad that the game exists, and I hope that team keeps making more games. But I don't know, maybe I'll give it another shot at some point, but I just was like, I don't have the patience for this right now. You know, so
yeah, you got to be in the right mood for it, but it's good.
And I did try. I got to do a 1-hour trial of Lego Horizon Worlds, and I liked that a lot. Actually,
it's very good.
So, I know it's weird. It seems like the game has managed to piss off both the Lego fans and Horizon fans, and I like it because it's just kind of doing its own thing. So it's got its own story that has some elements of the original Horizon Zero Dawn story, but a lot of people are complaining it's not like the other LEGO games, and I'm like, well, I don't care. I don't really play LEGO games that much. To me, I just really like the graphics. I think there's just funny dialogue, and you know, you just collect stuff and get costumes, and you can upgrade your skills. You level up and then get more hit points and stuff. So it's like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. So I like it.
It's a lot of fun.
I'll have to try and find a good deal on it.
Let's see. And with that, we should probably hit some of Fire Miner's many questions. We're saving the Xbox layoff thing for a little later because, good lord. Okay, so we'll hit a few of the smaller ones. Speaking of the Switch, Arcade Archive 2, Air Combat 22 is available. Please play it. It's part of the arcade game that eventually became the first Ace Combat. Yeah, so there was, pre-Ace Combat, there was Air Combat and Air Combat 22. I don't know why they named it that way. But Air Combat 22 is... Oh, it was because it was on Namco's Super System 22 hardware.
Oh.
The hell is that? Oh, wait, I should know that because I have the great big book of all the game consoles. Oh, no.
Yeah, well, that wasn't a console. That was a arcade board, but...
Okay.
I assume because Namco does all the game centers.
Yeah, so it was their arcade board that ran Ridge Racer. It was an early 3D arcade board. It's kind of neat that that this game is available officially because it hadn't been before. Air Combat 22 and Ridge Racer are our first in the Arcade Archives 2 range. Or you could also get Arcade Archives on Switch and PS4. I don't know what the difference is, but I'm sure that there's a reason that those are different things. But yeah, so you got Arcade Archives and Arcade Archives 2. All the current systems can play some form of Air Combat 22. I get why they switched to Ace Combat as a name. It's a better name. If you got an Ace Combat game at launch on the PS1, it was like a weird fucked up version of this, and it was just called Air Combat. Ace Combat would fully come into its own with Ace Combat 2, which is the first one to take place in the world of what has now been christened Strange Real.
Sure.
Okay.
That is the setting of the alternate universe setting of most of the Ace Combat games that people care about. As of now, according to this Ace Combat wiki, I'm reading 13 Strange Real games. Most but not all Ace Combat games take place in some form of Strange Real. It's... including, confusingly, Assault Horizon does not... But the game released in America as Assault Horizon Legacy, the 3DS game, which is secretly just a remake of Ace Combat 2, and released in Japan as Ace Combat Cross Rumble, is a Strange Real game.
Okay.
Video games are confusing. Uh-huh. But yeah.
Video game marketing and games are even worse.
Yep, so enjoy that and be thankful that I haven't launched into the fact that there are two Wonder Boy 3s, a Wonder Boy 5, and no Wonder Boy 4.
I want to know how that happened.
One of them is the arcade game Wonder Boy 3 The Monster's Lair. One is the console game Wonder Boy 3 The Dragon's Curse, aka Monster World 2. And the sequel to that, Wonder Boy and Monster World, christens itself as Wonder Boy 5 Monster World 3. Why? I could not tell you.
Okay.
I guess that the thought process was that one of the two Wonder Boy 3s must logically be Wonder Boy 4. But
logic has long since left the building here.
Yeah.
In fact, okay. I would say logic is the opposite of wonder.
Wonder Boy life just begun.
I just found out that Neverwinter Nights 2 Enhanced Edition is coming out like next week, and it's like, why? I don't know.
Neverwinter Nights 2 is good.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. Because when I tried to play it on PC way back in the day, it ran like crap, and the level creation tools did not work at all.
Yeah. That has negative nothing to do with whether the campaign is good.
Yeah, I suppose.
It's an Obsidian game.
Yeah.
And this comes with it.
Was that their first? Was that Obsidian's first game?
I can't remember if that or KOTOR 2 managed to sneak out first. But yeah, that comes with both of its expansions and the like additional adventure module. So Mask of the Betrayer, Storm of Seer, and whatever the adventure module was called. So, I mean, that's a lot of game for what you're spending like $26. That's a lot of game for that. So hopefully that's a decent remaster. And hopefully it comes to consoles, so I have an excuse to play it.
It was Knights of the Old Republic too, for sure.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, I wasn't sure which one had managed to sneak out first. That was quite the bow, soldier. Must have been hard on the... You're not just a soldier. But yeah, so while I'm looking at that... Let's see what's this actually coming out on. Sorry, I'm just curious. These are my retainers,
Lapis and Citrine. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm just browsing through the Switch store right now, looking at upcoming releases. Tales of the Shire. That looks neat. That looks like Animal Crossing with Lord of the Rings, you know, hobbits.
Yeah, I remember them showing that at one point.
And then,
what's the goal of the game? To make sick and breakfast.
You have to survive. You have to survive long enough to have second breakfast.
Yeah, you gotta make sure you have first breakfast first.
Neverwinter 2 is coming to everything.
Yeah, and then the new Ninja Gaiden from the Game Kitchen, the Blasphemous people. That's coming out the 31st. It looks like.
Yeah, that looks neat.
Yeah. I want to play that. Not an RPG, but it's fine. Who cares?
Fireminer asks, a limited run just released a Doom SNES cart that has a Raspberry Pi in it to emulate the Super FX chip and double the game's frame rate. At that point, can we even say it's a SNES game? Not meaningfully.
But also, like does it matter?
I would say that, like, you know, like, at that point, I would question why you were bothering, is really my thought process. Like, oh, it's running on my Super Nintendo. Like, not really. Like, the thing that's interesting about Doom SNES is the fact that it's, like, really impressive, but also still doesn't work. like, that's one of the... That's, like, an old version... that was made entirely independent of id Software's own attempts to optimize this game for consoles, like the 32X and Jaguar versions, and basically all subsequent console versions until, like, the Xbox 360 era, all have simplified level layouts that were designed in-house at id Software to try to, like, squeeze the thing onto memory-limited consoles. The SNES version doesn't do that. It fundamentally does not work the way that any of the other versions do. It was programmed by the guy who would go on to program Bleem, the PS1 emulator for PC and Dreamcast.
Oh.
Wait a moment. Like, extraordinarily talented programmer and did incredible work, but also, like, it doesn't, like, that is not a good way to play Doom, but it's a fascinating way to play Doom, in part because it's, like, weird and janky and doesn't quite work despite, like, incredible work from the person who helped make it. And honestly, I think that, like, the only reason I would want to play it is to see how it fails to run properly. If you're sticking in a Raspberry Pi, it's like, well, you might as well have just played it on the Raspberry Pi. You might as well have played regular Doom on the Raspberry Pi. Like, there's no point in that to me. I don't need a physical cartridge to stick in my Super Nintendo that is basically just doing all the work for it. Yeah, it just doesn't have much meaning to me. I mean, if that's really something you want, if that fulfills something in your life, I'm not going to tell you to stop, but for me, it's like, I don't really see a point in doing this.
Yeah.
Let's see. There could be interesting hypotheticals in, like, situations where, like, you'll see situations where there were two different kinds of ROM chips you could get for Super Nintendo games early in its life that, like, required different clock frequencies. And so there's a bunch of games early on that have slow ROM, and that causes additional slowdown that was not necessary. It was just, like, they cheaped out on the ROM. And so there have been interesting, like, hacks or conversions to, like, run those in fast ROM to see what they would run like if the company had opted for the more expensive fast ROM. And those are interesting because it's just kind of interesting to see the hypothetical of, well, could this have run better on a contemporary system? And it's like, yeah, it kind of could. In general, like, that's as far as my brain cares for hypotheticals. If you're just slamming in, like, here's a modern ass computer and it's fixing things, it's like, well, then I might as well have just played it on the modern ass computer.
The latest versions of Doom 1 and 2 are quite good.
I think you can play Doom on anything.
Yeah, but, like, if you already bought Doom 1 and 2 on, like, Xbox or Steam, then you automatically got the upgrade. And it's got some additional content, like, I guess... I was playing it one day. It's, like, a whole new campaign. It's exclusive to that new version, you know, developed by Night Dive, I think. So it's very difficult, but it is cool. I had some fun with that.
Yeah. Okay. To hit a couple more of these before we get into the big thing. Speaking of East, some fan is trying to translate the East 5 remake on the PS2. More power to them. I personally can't imagine dedicating that much effort into the East 5 remake, a remake that is not terribly good and felt kind of cheap at the time. But, I mean, I'm sure that's interesting to someone. I'd honestly say that the East 4 remake is more interesting just because it's, like, a weird fucked up version of the already weird and fucked up Tonkin House East 4. But, you know, like, East 5, it's just sort of like, yep, that's... I'm just waiting for Falcom to do their own remake of East 5, so we'll see. I've been waiting for 10 years, we'll see what happens.
Hopefully eventually, because, yeah, there's... None of those... No, East 5 is good, really.
I think East 5 on Super Nintendo is fine. It's not amazing. It's clear that, like... They were looking at how to improve on that when they made Ark, which produced some of the best games in the series. So I think 5 is an interesting stepping stone that is flawed, but fun. Let's see. Okay, so I am... Okay, now we have to tackle the elephant in the room. So Microsoft obliterated thousands of jobs, killing a number of studios, turning a few more into just support studios, like mass layoffs to most of them. I'm going to try to make sure that I checkbox everything that we know has been destroyed. So the most public one is that that Perfect Dark reboot that they've been trying to get off the ground for like 6 years. The studio that they created in order to do that has been obliterated. That game is canceled. The only thing we ever saw of it in any meaningful sense was a trailer from a few years ago that was smoke and mirrors, but offered an interesting idea for what the game could be, where it appeared to take on elements of an immersive sim. As far as I can tell, no part of that game's design ever fully coalesced into a game. That is on leadership's heads for essentially the problem that a lot of these like purpose-built studios that are made to just shepherd one franchise end up having, where they've been given the directive to make more without like a strong unifying vision for what the game should be. But that's way worse for Perfect Dark, a series that had essentially no identity in the modern age. Like, they were having to build the idea of Perfect Dark from scratch, with the only directive being make more Perfect Dark. And that's an unenviable position to be in at the best of times. They called in Crystal Dynamics for a period to try to give the project some focus. It doesn't seem like it ever really came together. That is an unequivocal failure of leadership at Microsoft to determine what they wanted when they put together the studio. So that's dead. So Rare had a game called, like, Rare hit some huge layoffs. I don't know what the exact number is. But yeah, like, the Perfect Dark developer, the initiative is just dead. Doesn't exist anymore. All employees in there, like, presumably the vast majority laid off. There might be some that got transferred internally, but given the amount of layoffs throughout the Xbox division, that number is probably not great. So Rare had something called Everwild in development. Indications seem to be that that had been in some phase of pre-production for like 7 years. It seems like Sea of Thieves is the only thing Rare does anymore at this point, which is not that surprising.
Except that that game is terrible.
It's not what you want out of it. Like, it's not what I want out of it, but it is not terrible by any stretch of the imagination. That's
good at
too
what
harsh.
It's trying to be. It's good at what it's trying to be. But yeah, Everwild's dead. Along with, yeah, a fair number of Rareware layoffs. There was an MMO being produced internal to Bethesda, like ZeniMax Online. It was their, like, the studio that does The Elder Scrolls Online had some sort of new MMO that was in, like, that was a few years into development. That one got murdered. Whoever was working on that instead of Tesso seems to be gone. Forza Motorsport section of the franchise, the one made by Turn 10, the one that dates back to the original Xbox, that seems to have been completely iced. Half of Turn 10 got fired. The other half is being used as a support studio for Playground Games, who are currently working on the Fable remake and a new Forza Horizon, apparently.
Yep.
So... The Forza Motorsport, like, the ones that play like Gran Turismo, those seem to be indefinitely iced. But, yeah. The current estimate for how many people actually got fired, I'm trying to find a source on. I know that, like... you know, even things that you would think, like, why would you even consider laying off people in this? Like, the studio, like, some of the support studios that make sure that, like, it's possible to put out a Call of Duty game every year, like, they got hit with big, big layoffs.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Okay. So
even Call of Duty, huh? Jeez.
Yeah. The exact number seems to be somewhere on the order of 9,000 workers. Like,
is that all across Microsoft, or is that just Xbox?
All across Microsoft, I believe. It's genuinely, yeah. Let's see. It's evil.
This company made tens of billions of dollars last year.
This company made tens of billions of dollars, and the thing that they're trying to do with this set of mass layoffs, which isn't even the first set of mass layoffs this year, is to, one, you know, appease shareholders, and two, spend money on LLMs.
I was going to say, I thought I read somewhere they were putting like $80 billion into an AI system.
Yeah, they are putting $80 billion into LLM, like, development. That is short-sighted, would be the polite thing to describe it. The less polite thing would be fucking stupid, but
I was going
to
say, need we be polite?
Fucking ridiculous. Dumbest.
Yeah, like,
fuck.
That's why I followed up with fucking stupid. Like,
we don't even need bother with.
Yeah, like you're betting the farm on something that no one has even figured out. Like, the only theoretical, like, payout is, like, this becomes so ubiquitous people can't ignore it. I don't think that the utility of LLMs at this stage stands up to that. I don't think it's even terribly close.
No.
And I think that in a couple of years, we will be seeing companies rapidly backtracking on their LLM expansions. I'm going to keep saying LLM instead of AI, because AI is a marketing term. But
thank you.
Seriously, is there anything more annoying than trying to get to a conversation with somebody online and they have decided to equate AI to literally everything involving algorithmic systems?
Yeah,
I had somebody try to convince me that basic spell check counted as AI.
I mean, in the sense that LLMs are AI, which is to say that they are not intelligent.
I mean, your average LLM is basically autocorrect on steroids to begin with, and about as useful.
It's working on fundamentally similar principles.
Except it would probably correct your spelling worse.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, like, I've had to bring up to people at points in work, like, I get that sometimes you'll throw things into these things to, like, get to do some sort of tedious task for you. Don't ask it to count. It doesn't know how. Because, like, there were situations where, like, they needed something counted, and it's just, like, I had to manually go in and double-check it, because I was, like, the number mattered. And the response I had to give was, don't ask it to count, it doesn't know how.
My favorite was the ongoing saga of trying to get it to answer how many R's are in the word strawberry. Properly.
Yeah, it'll do that a lot. It's gonna give you... it's going to give you the wrong answer and then act like it reasoned to it. And yeah, like the wrong. Yeah, because the thing about it is that it's always going to, it'll give you an answer, because it knows what the shape of an answer looks like, and it'll give
it's
you a reason. Yeah. And it will give you a reason because it knows the shape of what reason, like how that sort of sounds like reason through. But it doesn't know anything. It doesn't. It responds with what sounds, what looks like what has been right in the past, as opposed to having any understanding of what right is. Mm-hmm. And so, it has no understanding of base principles. It cannot reason its way to a correct answer.
It cannot necessarily remember what it said 5 minutes ago.
Oh boy. Yeah.
I asked it to make me a basic for loop just when I was fucking around.
Oh, Lord, just to see what would happen.
And it threw in code I did not ask for.
Yep.
I was just sitting there like, what?
You want this? You want this?
What
you love
the
this.
Fuck?
Yeah,
the worst thing of it was I had to try out the hell is it called GitHub Copilot.
Oh yeah, that
and
thing.
And it installs its own like for anyone that has never programmed.
Did it install a goddamn IDE?
No. It's a plugin for Visual Studio Code. But
okay, yeah.
I'm just trying to explain this for anyone that's never coded. Imagine like a text editor where you're writing code, and generally you'll write some code and it'll pop up with like, you'll put in a variable name or put in like a function name, and it'll help you and show you what to do next. It's like something
like
that's been in there forever in these IDEs.
There's a lot to keep track of when you're writing code, and so the IDE is just supposed to like keep track of things you've put in before, things that you noticeably haven't mentioned before and why that might be a problem.
Like you can put in an object name and then type in a period and it'll bring up all the different variables and functions on that object, things like that.
Yeah, everything that is compatible with that object.
Yes. So GitHub Copilot replaces all of that with its own auto suggestions.
It's less than useful response.
Quote, helpful, quote, quote.
Yes. That were so distracting, I had to scour the internet to figure out how to turn it the fuck off.
Yeah, like,
because
it's giving you, it's generating ideas of what it thinks your code is going to look like, and it's like, no, you have no idea what I'm trying to make, and you're making it worse.
Exactly. It's like, what is this? Is that right? No, it's not right. And it just slows down the regular flow of programming to a fucking crawl, and I hate it. I hate it so much.
Yeah, like, IDEs are dumb. In the good sense, they are dumb in the sense that they are not trying to solve for things. They are just supposed to give you information based on what you have entered.
Remember the original etymology of the word dumb means doesn't talk.
Yes.
Yeah, like a good IDE is often tailored to the language you're working in. Like with Visual Studio Code, that's usually like you would enter in some sort, you would put in a plugin that like tells it what kind of language you might be using. But you know, a lot, you'll get tons of IDEs that are just like, yeah, this is an IDE tailored specifically to one language and it knows the general good practices for that language. Like, I remember when I was learning Java and I installed a Java IDE and it was just very helpful in like, this is what a Java object declaration should look like, and this is what a method declaration should look like to make sure that my code didn't look like shit. Like that, to make it easy to work the way that Java expects code to work. And it worked perfectly well because fundamentally what you want an IDE to do is not to try to write code for you. You want it to like remind you of like, this is how I should be writing code. This is what I have already done.
Exactly. Or simple things like, yes, that is the correct variable name, because you don't want to have to scroll up or open another class and be like, was this the right variable name? Just, there's a lot of things to keep track of across many different files, and an IDE's job is to make that less complicated.
This hasn't been declared in this file.
Yes. And trying to use like, shitty fucking AI does the opposite of that.
Yeah, the AI, which is designed to be agreeable, will just be like, yeah,
sure.
That's fine.
Or maybe you'll throw some stuff in there and you'll be like, why doesn't this work? Why is it telling me this isn't a real variable name? What the fuck did you just here?
it just created a function that refers to like three variables, none of which exist, and several of which are probably supposed to be the same one, but aren't.
Yes. The kindest thing I can say about it is it saves you maybe a minute copying and pasting an example from fuck, what the hell is this name of that site? I look at it all the time.
Is it Stack Overflow?
Yeah, Stack Overflow. Thank you. Copy and paste an example from Stack Overflow, or maybe an example from like the API documentation for whatever you're working on.
But then it takes like dozens of minutes every time that it fucks something up for no reason.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I mean, that just think about it. It's copying and pasting something. If that's the best thing you can do, then what the fuck are we? What are we doing? Like, what the fuck are we doing? This stuff sucks.
We're learning not to think.
It sounds to me like people who know nothing about computers and programming are just dumping money into this. I don't know why.
That's exactly what they're doing. And the reason why is because they think somehow they can magically make more money out of it.
They want to replace all the people with robots because robots don't need health insurance, right?
And technically, after the initial investment, they don't need a salary either.
And robots don't get sick, and robots don't call out. They don't need vacation time. They don't argue with instructions.
Well, what actually is going to happen is this giant bubble is going to burst, and lots of people are going to lose a lot of money.
And so, like, someone will eventually try to take this extremely immature technology and force it to function the way they expect it to function. And then, you know, the second that someone attempts that, they're going to lose their shirts on something that straight up doesn't work. At which point, like, that's when the walls come tumbling down.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I saw, like, a paper that was remarkably sanguine about the potential of AI to run storefronts. And like, this was despite the fact that the paper, which was put out by a company attempting to sell you a robot that will run a store for you, repeatedly mentioned things like, oh, sometimes it would drastically overcharge for things, and sometimes it would just give them away for free for no reason. And also sometimes it would just sort of scream at the customer.
That last part is very similar, because, you know, anyone who's ever had to work customer service would just love to scream at the customer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I do that, I get fired. But, yeah, so that was bad. And like, somehow their conclusion at the end of this was like, but we're sure we'll get that fixed. It's fine. One time it successfully did a transaction. Think about if it did that all the time. Yeah, do think about that. I don't think that you're anywhere close to that.
If I release software that did it would sometimes function at this level, I would be fired.
Yep. Sometimes it would offer customers items that didn't exist.
Sweet.
Its job was to run a vending machine. You know what runs a vending machine? A vending machine.
Wait, hold on. No, hold on. Rewind a second. You have to explain this to me. A vending machine?
Yeah, because like that's theoretically the only thing it would be fit to control.
Something that already doesn't need control because it's one of the simplest, like,
yeah,
self-serve, like, stores, yeah, humanity has ever created.
The thing that's beautiful about this is that even if it worked, it would be useless.
remember this is the same tech bro culture that has independently reinvented the concept of a bus multiple times while thinking that they're the hottest.
All roads lead to bus.
This is the same culture that you just saw an article about how people were talking about taking mini early retirements, and the response was just,
that's called a vacation.
This is a fucking vacation.
Yes, I saw that article. Yes. It's like this is an actual, like, some sort of Wall Street Journal or something, some sort of news article, and it's like, okay, this is an interesting new tactic or new anti-worker tactic to take. Stigmatizing vacations.
Tech corporations have been desperately attempting to create new speak in order to they've been in drafting new forms of new speak in order to, like, make you feel bad for being human. So
First there was quiet quitting, and now it's many retirements.
Yeah, quiet quitting is just work.
Quiet quitting is doing your job, but in a way that your boss doesn't feel like sufficiently as though you are giving them your adulation for the privilege of working. Let's see. Fire Runner brings up John Romero's studio hasn't actually closed. They're shuffling staffs and trying to figure out what they can do with the funding. Oh. So yeah, one of the things that happened is that Romero Games, John Romero's studio, with his wife, Brenda Romero, I think that's her name. Let me double check. Yeah, Brenda Romero. John and Brenda Romero's studio, Romero Games, is in deep trouble. They're primary source of funding right now was a first-person shooter from Microsoft that they were deep into development on. There's no indication that there's any issues with the project, but all of its funding has been cut from Microsoft at this moment. They are trying to work out some alternate project or someone else to pick up the publishing rights to keep the lights on. I wish them nothing but luck, but one of the things I want to bring up in relation to that is that officially, we know Microsoft's death toll, which is to say that they laid off approximately 4% of their staff. But that does not tell the whole story of what they've done. Because the full story of what they've done also will include that I'm sure that Romero Games is hardly unique in being an externally developed game for which they have canceled funding on. And the inevitable consequence of a studio that, like, suddenly losing a huge amount of funding is that they, is that a lot more layoffs will happen as a knock-on effect. And it won't be the little developer's fault that they did this. They continued to deliver games and meet their milestones, and then Microsoft said, but we'd really rather spend this money on a garbage robot.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those companies will inevitably shutter as a knock-on effect of this, and we don't know what that death toll is going to look like. But like the reason I bring this up is I want to be clear that the number 9,000 is a lower bound of what this has done. This has, like, the knock-on effect will destroy the livelihoods of tons more people. Mm. This is a fundamentally evil act.
Yes.
But yeah, so this sucks.
Fundamentally stupid to the point where it's just evil by default.
It's one of those things that, like, at some point, if your act is sufficiently reckless, your intention no longer matters.
Hmm. Do you know if they laid off anyone at Mojang? Out of curiosity.
I feel like the answer has to be yes.
Which is,
because they laid off people everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's hey, thanks for making the best-selling video game of all time. Get fucked.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Basically,
what did you do for this quarter?
Well, there was the Minecraft movie. Fuck off.
Yeah, well, we don't bother to watch the movies.
But yeah, so yeah, it's a fundamentally evil, short-sighted, and craven set of moves. Get fucked.
Yeah, I was all in on Xbox. I have downgraded my Game Pass, which is temporary, which is just to give me time to figure out what games I have to purchase for the kids, and then it'll be fucking gone from my monthly bill.
Why? Yeah, because it's just like, figure out what the kids need. Figure out what the kids can't live without, buy that, and then kill the subscription.
Just probably just going to be Minecraft, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like that's like, you're going to save a lot of money every month.
Yeah. And I'm going to take that, and I'm going to upgrade my PS Plus subscription so I can play PS3 games via streaming.
And play the bad versions of PS3 games. We're all exactly suffering.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so let's hit some other less depressing discussion. Is it weird that some people are mad at how the Atelier Yumiya collab in Tekken 8 is so low effort? As far as I can tell, it is a hairstyle. They're complaining that all Bandai added to Tekken 8 are just a few avatar cosmetic options. Isn't it just a norm? I remember the time games like Tales and Valkyria Chronicles collab and just gave your characters a few new shirts. I think part of what threw people on this is, one, half the time when they say they're collabing, that means here's a character. That's frequently been the case, and oftentimes a character that, like, didn't make any goddamn sense. So, you know, like, I think at some point some of the Atelier fans were thinking, oh, Yumiya is going to be a guest character in Tekken 8, which would not be out of the ordinary. I wouldn't have gotten too excited until I saw anything, but also part of the issue is that they like, some of that, like, leaked out through, like, financial reportings, which makes it sound like it was a more important collab than it seems to have become. Because it's just, like, materially this will shift basically this will shift enough units to not actually be of material concern to shareholders. But, yeah, so it's one of those things. You know, you always got to keep careful, but I can kind of see why people thought this might have been a bigger collab than it was going to be. I mean, we just got, you know, like, Tekken 7 had, like, Street Fighter, Fatal Fury, Final Fantasy, and Walking Dead for some reason, characters in it. So, you know, it was not impossible to imagine that Atelier, which has seen a sharp uptick in terms of success over the past few years, might have gotten something that would both be kind of neat to see, like a Tekken-styled Atelier character, and would have heavily boosted the profile of the series. So I can kind of see why people were excited. Looking into it deeper, it seems that Tekken fans are disappointed that Bandai didn't give any Yumiya costumes to Tekken 8 characters, even though the promotional art shows Reyna in an Atelier costume. I think the big problem is as much that the costume itself is kind of disappointing looking. It's just kind of like, oh, this doesn't do that. This isn't that visually distinctive. Let's see.
Which it's in itself is a disappointment just because Atelier is a series that is really big on costume design.
So Fireminer asks, is it normal for Japanese electronics to not have an English language option? You may know about this, but it used to be the case that Walkmen sold in the European Union had a volume cap because they were required by law. So what people did was importing Japanese Walkmen with uncapped volumes, then flashing a new firmware onto it because the stock Japanese firmware didn't have an English option. I did know about that, but I'm not sure how much it's reflective, like, how common it is for, like, anything with a software-based UI to lack any sort of option to change the language to English in Japan. Like, I don't use enough Japanese consumer electronics to know.
Most random electronic devices probably wouldn't have an English option. Video game consoles are a different matter. I mean, going back to definitely the DS and PlayStation 2 or 3, I can't remember which one, I was definitely able to put English options on a machine that was bought in this country. Especially once player profiles or player profiles became a thing. So, like, my PlayStation 3 had an American and a Japanese profile. And any game that had English options would play English automatically on the American profile. Which did not happen very often, but it was really cool when it did.
It's always fascinating when you get to see that happen.
Yeah, it was like, no, I mean, the game where it happened was Dragon's Dogma, so it was like, okay, this is a surprise.
Yeah.
The game to actually come with both language options fully voiced on disc. Yeah. So, but I guess a lot of it depends on the item in question and
how the company that produced it is geared up for international sales.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I mean, especially going forward with video game consoles, it's much easier to just maintain a global stock rather than regional or language.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what Pokemon's done for the last, I mean, three generations at this point? Four.
Yeah.
Four generations?
Okay, plus.
Yeah, ever since XY. It's,
Yeah,
you can just put it in any language you want. Or, I mean, out of the dozen or so that it has.
Yeah, at this point, if you're doing that with a video game, you're doing it with a pretty specific purpose in mind. So, like,
which makes it really annoying that Atlas doesn't do this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, the Japan only Switch 2 is being done to protect the domestic market. That's the kind of purpose you'd have to have in mind to start doing that at the stage.
Or like that one Persona fighting game that was like the only. Only region locked game on the PlayStation 3 because of that, because there was an issue with exchange rates at the time.
Yeah. But yeah, I think in general, consumer electronics are a slightly different beast with slightly different, like a lot of consumer electronics are sort of built to the market. And so they can be a little more insistent on these. Koei recently published a financial report which said that their highest source of revenue came from Apple devices, most likely microtransactions in mobile games. Interesting thing is that Koei mobile games are rarely available outside of East Asia and Southeast Asia. I still can't get around how did things turn out like this in the same year Koei's lineup being so stacked. Dynasty Warriors, Adelie of Romance, Three Kingdoms, Rise of the Ronin, and DOA Extreme Venus, all of which are available worldwide. So what I would say in response to this is that is stacked for a Koei lineup, but most of those are games that, like, if they sell 3 million units, that's a really big success for that franchise. Like, you know. And the other thing, I'm kind of curious if that's, like, gross or net revenue, because net revenue is kind of unbeatable on shitty mobile gachas. If they're of any kind of popularity, because it's just like, yeah, you have you put out the gacha game, you sell the JPEGs to go along with it, and someone spends themselves until they're homeless trying to get the JPEGs. The net revenue on that is deranged, because the initial outlay was low, but the amount theoretically spent is near enough infinite in the abstract. So I'd be curious if that is a gross or net revenue concept. Furthermore, Koei's Steam revenue finally reached 10% last year, but still lagged behind their revenue from Sony devices. It seems like the PS4 and PS5 combined is still more popular than PC. Yeah, I mean, like, you've got, like, Steam, like anything, has its dedicated users, and, like, we're seeing more, like, a great, like, the dedicated users are the ones that are most vocal online. The Steam, you know, like, the market share of Steam is increasing because, you know, everything's expensive now. You might as well play on your PC if it can play, like, lower-powered games. It's just one of those situations where it's like it's creeping up, but it's a long and slow road. And it's the other thing is you tag that to revenue, and you know, the Steam audience has been well trained not to pay full price for things. So,
mm-hmm.
Okay. How many people do you know still regularly play on their base PS4 and Xbox One? I am a bad person to ask that question to. I don't know that many people that had them.
I still use my Xbox One X on occasion.
Yeah, that's wild.
cards.
Well, we have it out in the living room, so it gets used as a Blue Air player if we want to play like Minecraft or something out there. It gets used.
Well, I had sold the PS4 and Xbox One to put towards the PS4 Pro, Xbox One X, which I then sold to put towards PS5 and Series X. I see no reason to hang on to old consoles if I have backwards compatibility. Although I do still have my Switch OLED because I'm just not sure what I want to do with it. I figure you were just saying that, you know, new Tony Hawk is what, like 40 gigabytes? It's like, well, that'll, like, I'm going to fill up that hard drive fast, so maybe keep the Switch OLED to play games that don't get any enhancements on Switch 2. You know?
That's what you should do. We'll see. That's why I am playing Fire Emblem Engage.
Engage.
Currently on my OLED.
And is there a Mandela effect here? Because I could have sworn they said that Mario Kart World would be game share compatible.
It is.
It's game share compatible on Switch 2.
So yeah. Both people need a Switch 2?
I don't know how game share works. So
Game share can be Switch 2 to Switch 1. I don't know that Mario Kart World is compatible with game share Switch 2 to Switch 1.
Okay.
It's possible to make games in such a way that they're compatible that way. I just don't know if Mario Kart World is one that can do that.
Yeah, because I thought they said it was going to be. All right. Well, like.
Yeah, I know that, like, at launch, the first game share compatible game that was Switch 2 to Switch 1 as an option was Split Fiction.
Yeah, and I can confirm that Clubhouse Games and Super Mario 3D World also can do that.
Yeah.
Okay. For some reason, I thought Mario Kart World would be set up like that. Mm-hmm.
What would be the purpose, I have to ask, though?
Well, what it is
play multiplayer.
Yeah, it's so that, like, if people come over to play Mario Kart, we don't have to do split screen. We can each get our own screen. Because I can have Switch 2 going to the monitor, Switch 1 going to the TV, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's see. So Fireminer posits the next question. With the Switch 2 and PS5 Pro pricing and sales figures as they are now, how many years of game support for the base Switch and PS4 can we expect? All in all, the PS4 is still getting plenty of new games. What I would say is, one, the Switch 2 being what it is will probably keep the PS4 alive to some extent, just because getting one to work on one gets you a lot of the way to getting it to work on the other. But the other thing I would say is that, like, part of the reason things keep coming out on PS4 is, unless you're, like, the most expensive games on the block, you're probably not able to build to the spec necessary to make it so that, like, the PS4 is just completely out of reach for development.
Honestly, I don't know anything of the technology involved, but this is sounding a bit like the situation where the PlayStation 2 survived so far into the PlayStation 3's life cycle that it became an actual issue.
Like, so. I would go further beyond on that and say that, like, the bigger deal here is that at this point, if you are a company there are, like, a handful of companies in the world making games at a spec where the PS4 is just completely out of the question. Like, you need to be making games that are so expensive to produce that it's genuinely, like difficult to imagine how they would show up on it's difficult to imagine, like, they're the biggest games in the world, but, like, you know, you look at some of these things and it's like, even big budget games, like, you know, for a long time in development, like, I'll throw one that, like, I don't want to talk about this game's quality, we've talked it to death, but for a long time in development, Final Fantasy 16 was a PS4 and PS5 game. Like, that is an avowed statement made by the development team. That game, if you tried, absolutely could have made it onto PS4. I have no doubt in my mind. There are sequences that I believe were designed to accommodate the loading off of the PS4's hard drive. There's certain design elements that simply don't make sense any other way. If you were willing to make the right cuts, you could get that game running on a PS4. They didn't, probably for a number of reasons. But ultimately, the idea of if they had shown a demo build of that and said this is running on PS4 hardware, I'd have said, yeah, that makes sense. And it's very rare to see games where it's like, I can't imagine how this would run on a PS4. Like Grand Theft Auto 6, that looks like a game where I'd like, I can't imagine that running on a PS4. But if you're not at that level, it's just you learn to make the judicious cuts because this game was already too expensive to not put it on everything you can imagine. And that's going to be an ongoing theme. That is going to be the ongoing thing that keeps Switch games and PS4 games going as long as they will. The Switch has consistently been a difficult one to work with because it is that generation below PS4 technology. But I think what we'll see, honestly, is probably a fair few games that now that developers can see what putting a Switch game on Switch 2 ends up doing, we might see developers taking that strategic choice of like, we're just going to make a Switch game and give like an uncapped frame rate mode or a free or cheap update that makes it work with Switch 2. Like, you know, quote unquote makes it work, that like optimizes it for Switch 2. Like, and we might just do that because that way, you know, we get the big market, but we also have a version that looks nicer for people with the nicer hardware. And since the original version that we were working with was targeting the original Switch, no one's going to complain that on Switch 2 it doesn't run great. It's going to run well. They might complain that the graphics are cut back, but, you know, you get a Switch 1 and a Switch 2 version, and like, you know, if the game isn't completely out of the question for Switch, maybe you keep doing that, because that's a huge, that's 150 million players. Why not?
It's a bigger market than the PS2 was.
That's a bigger market than PS2, bigger market than PS4. Like, yeah, if we can make that happen, you know, as long as it's not a game that's just completely out of the question, you're probably going to keep seeing those just until it becomes clear that market is not buying games anymore. And like, you know, the Switch 2, by all appearances, is doing really well. Like, we haven't gotten an update on sales figures, but analysts, for whatever their word is worth taking, they're guessing it might have sold 6 million units in June. Which, if true, is a bananas number. But like, broadly speaking, regardless of how well it sold, regardless of how much more it sold after that initial update, it sold really well. So like, you know, but
regardless, it is in fact a bonanza.
Yes, Donkey Kong bonanzas.
Yes. Since I have absolutely no knowledge to actually contribute to this conversation, I shall just continue with bad puns.
Okay. Yeah, but
bad puns are always appreciated.
I'm doing my part.
Yeah.
I'm doing my part.
Do your job.
But broadly speaking, I think you're going to keep seeing these, because you get them cheap enough, and it's like, you know, maybe later on you adapt into a mobile chipset. I don't know. Like, all of these attempts to make these things run on smaller pieces of hardware, like, it just sort of makes me think of, like, this just reminds me of, like, you know, a bunch of people adapted fucking PS4 games to run on iPhones, and like those versions drastically sold terribly, like absolutely horribly. But you know, it's a reminder of like, I think I mentioned this before, but the technical director at Kojima Productions, they just put out Death Stranding 2 on the beach. By all accounts, that's very good. I'll get around to it when it's on something that isn't a PS5, because I just don't use it that often. Just partly because I just don't have enough games for it, but you know, it's my setup. But you know, like, one of the things that was interesting from the CTO, chief technical officer, and one of the lead programmers was basically just them saying, like, yeah, the PS5, like, there's nothing, like, the way they described it was basically, there's nothing we can do on PS5 that was just completely impossible on PS4.
Hmm.
Like, it makes a lot of things easier. But, you know, essentially their thought process was there's really nothing that the new hardware can do that is just completely impossible on the old hardware. It just, you have to get creative. And I think that's sort of where we're at. Like, I've complained about it basically since this gen started, and I'm going to keep saying it. Like, the logistical limiter on new games is not the hardware. It's, you can't corral enough people to work in concert in such a way as to continue improving on this. The hard limit is 1,000 people working for 5 years, and the logistics of trying to make sure that all of those people are working as cogs in the machine to make the game happen. And I don't see a lot of reason to assume that that's going to change. Like, we have hit the limits of getting humans to work together on an entertainment product. That is where we are at.
Quetzalcoatl in the chat makes a point. The loading times on PS5 made a huge difference from PS4, though. SSD was machine on consoles. Yes, but you didn't need a whole new console just for that feature. You could have done that on a
You needed PS4. It. You needed to be able to guarantee it, and like that's part of the reason that you make a new console, is to guarantee a very specific set of features that are just like, this will always be there.
Yeah.
But and like, I do appreciate the lowered loading times and like lower, and the access speed is very important to certain things. But like, broadly speaking, you know, data streaming is not an idea, is not from physical media, is not an idea that's in its infancy. And like, yes, it will curtail things. There are things that do get cut back because of latency in terms of data read. But ultimately, I don't think that there's a lot of games that were actually held back by that beyond it just being kind of irritating. Like, I don't think that there was a lot of game design that was held in check by, well, we just can't read it off of the storage medium fast enough. I think that that's become a different kind of problem. But yeah, like broadly, like, you know, games just sort of, you know, and you can always find people that will notice and appreciate all of the subtleties of additional updates to the new hardware. You will find the kind of person that has strong opinions on different upscaling solutions and different implementations of things like HDR and all of these. You will find that kind of person that can see the difference between a 4K and an 8K image at a glance, on the same size screen, I should say. Like, you will always find those people, but I think that more and more the addressable number of people who are persuaded by those metrics just it has shrunk to the point where it kind of can't be your main market anymore. Like, that time is kind of over.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about this the other day, and, you know, people talking about the power level of the Switch 2 and how it compares to Steam Deck and other things. And basically, the more I think about it, it's like, we've really hit a threshold here, because Switch 2 is about as powerful as you can get without being prohibitively expensive, like the, you know, like the ROG Ally, without being, you know, without getting way too hot. You know, like a 4K mobile device would probably run hotter, and then it would have to be bigger and heavier for extra fans, and then you'd get less battery life.
Larger battery.
And so, yeah, we've really kind of hit a threshold for graphics, and also with just you know, diminishing returns, where the PS5 Series X Switch 2, it's about as powerful as you can get without being prohibitively expensive, like, you know, the $1,000, $2,000 NVIDIA graphics cards that can't really give you better graphics. They'll just give you better performance with, you know, path tracing or whatever, which honestly, path tracing doesn't necessarily look better. More realistic lighting isn't necessarily more artistically pleasing. Yeah. And then the PS5 Pro is $700 and doesn't include a disc drive. So, like, yeah, I think the Switch 2, for what you're getting, I think it's absolutely worth $450, you know? But if it was any more powerful than that, who would buy it? Like, you have a segment of the market that's going to buy the cheapest system, and there's nothing wrong with that. And that's why the PS2 was such a big seller, the Wii was such a big seller. And then you've got people who are willing to pay whatever it takes to get the most powerful thing, but that's not a very big market, you know, as we're discussing here.
It's definitionally niche. Definitionally niche.
Pretty sure so, it's possible the Switch 2 has already outsold the Steam Deck.
I'm sure it has.
Oh, it definitely has. Because the Steam Deck was only ever available through Valve.
Yeah. And even if it wasn't, I'm not sure how much more it would sell, to be honest.
I think it could sell better, but I also don't think it could sell better enough to make it worth Valve's while to have to worry about those kinds of supply lines.
Yeah.
Right. And regardless of system specs, the fact is that on my Switch 2, when I want it to launch a game, it just does it.
I can already guarantee that it will work.
I'm just on my Steam Deck. I have the Steam Deck OLED. I have the Switch 2. I want to just do some comparisons between different games. And like, I don't have too much overlap. So I thought, let's just check out some old Genesis games because I have the Sega Mega Drive Classics app on Steam, and there's the Switch Online app, and the damn thing wouldn't even launch on Steam Deck. So I'm like, okay, well then that's just Switch 2 is wins by default because the game launched.
Between its words in the English language.
So I'm like, it's fine, but now Microsoft is also, you know, they've got their Xbox themed ROG Ally handheld. It's like, that's not gonna sell either. The Series X, the Xbox One didn't sell. The Series X isn't selling. And now you're going to release another niche device that's not going to sell.
Yeah, like Microsoft
is
getting...
What are you doing?
Like, Microsoft is currently in the process of just branding Xbox onto things that they don't have to spend money on, which is why you have you had approximately 4 hours to purchase a Xbox-branded MetaQuest 3. That was very strange. I think ultimately, you know, we get these things. Like, one thing I do want to draw attention to when you were talking about, like, battery is Digital Foundry did some really interesting videos where they were just looking at what the actual power draw of the Switch 2 is when it's playing things like Cyberpunk was one of the ones that they were pulling up, because that was one where it was really crazy because it was like 1/10 the power draw of anything else that could play Cyberpunk. they are doing wizardry to make sure that, like, the game optimizes to try to keep that battery going as long as possible. It's a truly impressive, like something that the consumer level, like, never really even thinks about, other than, like, just being irritated that the battery doesn't last as long as they want. It's like, it is wild that this battery lasts more than 10 minutes playing a game like Cyberpunk. But yeah, like, you know, that's one of those things that you don't even think about, but under the hood, like, so much work has had to be done to get to where we are. And, you know, you can optimize and optimize and optimize, but, you know, we have seen, we are continuing to see what the limits of optimization are with the technology that exists, and the technology that exists is not advancing rapidly enough to meet what people got used to seeing. And the other thing that makes this hard is you look at something, you look at the other things that games, you know, look at what the current generation, like the kids coming up, they play games on things that are manifestly not ideal. Like, you know, the kind of person who's playing Fortnite on their phone is,
poor bastards.
You know, like, they have made a choice that, like, yeah, it's not ideal, but it's easy to use and it's what I have.
And I hope and so, I can match up with you in games.
But, you know, broadly speaking, it's a case where, like, you have to meet people where they are. You can't, like, the enthusiasts will follow you, but on some level, you have to meet people where they are. Like, you can complain for years that, like, oh, why did you make a Switch version of this? The Switch version is bad. It's like, look at how much worse it looks. But people had Switches, so someone who's just like, well, the choice is the Switch version or nothing, they're getting the Switch version. And that's just going to keep sort of being the case. Like, you know, meet people where they are. If someone's going to play a game on, you know, like, if you're really big on, like, the, you know, on these, like, particular niche product, like, one of the reasons that I don't think VR has ever really, it really has a path to take off at this point is that it can't meet people where they are. They have to come to, they have to be willing to take the plunge on a VR headset. And if you can't meet people where they are, they're just like, there's just not enough demand for where VR is to make that happen. And like, I think that that's kind of the thing. Like, if you want people to come to you, it needs to be to make the value proposition clear from the word go. Like, the value proposition of, like, to point at a successful launch, a successful recent launch, the value proposition that Switch 2 made immediately was, hey, you average consumer loves playing Mario Kart with family and friends. Here's the new one. It's on this new thing. And then, you know, to hardcore players, without even realizing it to some extent, like, to people who had a lot of Switch games, the Switch 2's value proposition has been, what if all of your Switch games ran better than you ever imagined they could?
Yep. Worth every penny.
Like, hey, sure, I will spend $3 on, like, a nice portable 60 FPS rendition of Saints Row 3 and 4. They sold those for $3 as a pack.
Fucking dollars. Madman.
Like, yeah. Genuinely deranged. Hey, yes, I will take the two Klonoa games that I loved growing up, and now they run at 60 FPS, and they're $10. Like,
the Saints Row with Vice President Keith motherfucking David for $1.50, essentially. What the fuck?
I would like to bring up that the most deranged thing about that package was the fact that the package of both of them cost the same amount as getting either individually. Yes. And both individually were also marked down heavily to reach $3, but for some reason, getting the two together was also $3.
Yes, I had to look at that like 5 times. It's like, wait, this can't Why be right. Like this can't be right.
Why are you the way that you are?
I'm not complaining, but but yeah, or you know, like I thought about getting Wolfenstein 2: The New Colossus for years, but like, you know, if I got it on console, it's like, well, when would I get around to it? If I got it on Switch, it's like, you know, 30 FPS would be fine, but and Panic Button does yeoman's work, but it doesn't always hit that. Well, now it does, so, you know, I picked it up, $6, Wolfenstein 2: The New Colossus. But yeah, like, yeah, you meet people where they are, and if you want people to follow you, you have to give them that proposition for why they should. And I, you know, I don't know what that's going to look like, you know, because, you know, we, in a few years, like, you know, probably by 2028, there's going to be a PlayStation 6. I don't know what that's going to look like.
And is it going to cost $800?
Yeah, no. I think there's a very real chance that it does.
This is what I mean. It's like, okay, yeah, we can get more powerful consoles, but
why?
I mean, I'm gonna throw something else at you. There's like a very good chance that there are still active PS4 releases coming out when that happens.
Right, and then like we were talking about with the budget for these games, it's like we cannot make the jump to 8K. It's not feasible. You know,
we cannot, like, the, you know, every single time, like, the requirements for fidelity are orders of magnitude higher, and they're also rubbing up against things that people are already saying they don't want to deal with. Like, people are constantly complaining, why are these goddamn games so huge? And it's like, a big part of that is the, you know, the data cost of fidelity.
Yeah.
You make a game that is a AAA game that is 8K at all times, like, the density of data required for that, you're going to get a 400 gigabyte video game. And it's just like, you know, who, and, you know, ultimately that will run into, like, who wants to keep that on their console at all times? That's insane.
Well, I've long joked that the Call of Duty games are designed to just monopolize your hard drive so you can't play anything else.
Well, I guess I could download and I could delete this and download another game, or I could just play another round of zombies. But yeah, it's just one of those things. It's like, it is hard to, you know, like, and, you know, that this is all assuming you could get the kind of manpower together, like, to make an 8K game in any kind of time frame. Like,
and
that,
and you're not going to get AI to do it. So
no, like, no matter how much an executive is saying, well, what if you just had AI make this part? Like, the person who wants to buy an 8K game wants something high fidelity, not something that looks like that.
We have 8K textures, yeah, but the art is ugly as shit. You know?
Yeah, we just had the computer, like, just fuck it shit up, and that's what it spat out, but it's 8K.
Enjoy this beautiful woman in 8K textures, but she's got six fingers on each hand. Like, what?
Oh man, that would be better than I would expect. She's got seven hands to seven arms to hold you. But yeah, just one of those things. Like, yeah, it's, you know, the limitation is not the technology. The technology has not let us down yet. We just cannot do it. We have, like, maybe someday, but certainly not anytime soon. The middleware is not mature enough to pick up the slack, and I don't think it will be for many years.
Yeah.
So that was depressing.
Yeah.
Let's try and burn through some of the remaining questions.
Yeah, and then rush it down. As for PS4 and Switch question, it also depends on how the games are optimized. Genshin Impact and Honkai Star Rail can run on base PS4, but the performer is just so badly optimized for PS4 that miHoYo just didn't bother to make a PS4 port for Bladder. Just went straight to PS5. Yeah, I don't know how you make a game that runs like shit on a PS4 that is also designed to run on a phone. I don't understand how that's designed. It to me points to the idea that the game simply was not a priority on those platforms. Genshin fans have almost entirely given up on their game being on the Switch and Switch 2. Yeah, I'd suspect it would be possible if they decided that they wanted to make those a priority. But I think that miHoYo, as it stands, simply doesn't consider that a priority. Let's see. SSD is much meaner. I remember even. I liked about this generation. Basically, every PS5 game offered a 60 FPS mode at least. That needs to be mandatory on console gaming. Yeah, I think we're, you know, in general sense, like, fidelity is kind of less an option nowadays. Quetzalcoatl. I think that we will continue to see that the differentiator will be like a high frame rate mode as much as possible. You can see that, like, has become a priority even to companies that would normally consider, like, actually acknowledging the concept of a frame rate to be anathema by dint of, like, the last holdout for we don't even acknowledge what a frame rate is to our audience was Nintendo. Like, they were the company that would not acknowledge what a frame rate was because their audience was assumed, and I think a fair bit of their audience they were probably correct on, but their audience was assumed to not really understand what that meant. But, you know, they put a variable refresh rate monitor onto their current system. Like, that is the ultimate acknowledgement that, like, at this point, one of the key differentiators is just performance.
Yeah, and also, like, we talk about the cost of higher fidelity, but gee, I play most of my PS5 and Series X games in performance mode. Wow, who would have thought?
Yep.
which are 1080p or 1440p, and it's like, all right, so we're not using your 4K textures anyways. Jeez. Yep.
But hey, for 1440p Legend of Zelda. But yeah. Fireminer says, in my line of business, I'm seeing a lot of companies gearing up and hunkering down to prepare for the incoming depression. In the game industry, this is manifesting in console manufacturers and online market owners being increasingly unwilling to take a loss leader while increasing the extraction of their customer base. What do you think about this phenomenon? I mean, I think that, like, it ultimately is kind of ignorant of the fact that, like, how to put this?
It's Reaganomics. No,
I think ultimately what it's ignorant of is that, like, you'll get certain whales that will continue to be able to spend at any cost, but at some point, like, you want to keep a broad consumer base even during a depression, and that will mean occasionally just, like, not getting the theoretical maximum profit because you want to maintain a user base. And I think that companies that fail to understand that will be badly positioned when, you know, fingers crossed, eventually the economy turns back up after that forthcoming, like, bout of that forthcoming depression. Like, hopefully, you know, at some point that economy ticks back up, and, you know, the companies that sort of were able to maintain consumer interest even when it was bad times will be positioned better than ones that tried to be as extractive as they could manage. Speaking of optimizations, there are a lot of know-nothings on YouTube and Twitter who are pointing out how much mesh and polygon certain objects in a game have and then screaming this game is badly optimized. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of true of every aspect of the technology that powers a video game, is that, like, I forget what the name for this effect is, but there is this way people have of interacting with most things where they understand, like, a small piece of it and they try to generalize that out to the entirety of it. And when you do that, you inevitably make bad judgments because you don't actually understand the underlying, like, reasoning as to why something was done the way that it was. You know,
being a pointy-haired boss.
I mean, to some extent, the commentary that, like, I routinely spout on here is me trying to, like, run counter to that, but I don't understand all of the underlying pressures, so I'm just spitballing. But, you know, it's one of those things that, like, we do our best. But, you know, I think that an important part of this is understanding that our understanding is pretty limited. So, you know, I try to work from the perspective of there's probably a reason for this I'm not getting.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, I think the last time I said that a game was poorly optimized, it was roughly early PlayStation 1 level looking graphics. And it ran worse on my computer, either of my laptops, than things that were originally made for, like, PlayStation 3 or PlayStation 4.
Mm-hmm.
And it was definitely not that complicated a game total. So,
yeah.
That's about the only metric I'll take is, like, okay, can I actually run it? And does it look like something that I should be able to run on this computer?
Yeah.
Like, something terrible has happened.
Like, I played Valheim for, like, an hour, and it's like, it looks like a Nintendo 64 game, but it also ran like a Nintendo 64 game.
Oh no.
And I'm suspecting now that maybe they turned on, like, ray tracing without telling people, and my old 6600 XT,
I love when it does that,
couldn't do that. But I'm like, but it, why would this have ray tracing? It looks like an N64 game. So
what benefit is there? I would be fine with non-dynamic lighting.
Like, I don't know, but it's just that's a game I would say was poorly optimized because it, I mean, maybe it's been fixed since then. I don't know. I don't know if it's still in early access or if it got fully released. I don't know, but yeah.
It was a bad fit. It's baffling. It's genuinely baffling if you think about it for too long. Let's see. Speaking of which, why are so many Mario Kart fans doom posting and trashing on Mario Kart World? Because people who spend time on the internet are not the target audience of the Mario Kart games.
Because people are just miserable.
This game isn't bad. You all are just mean.
Mario Kart World is one of the best games I've ever played. Okay?
It's my favorite Mario Kart.
So if you're upset about the fact that if you're upset about the fact that they patched out the thing where you could play versus mode and everybody hits random and then you're guaranteed to get a regular 3-lap course, then there are 10 other Mario Kart games you can play that do exactly that. So go play that instead. It's not that there's nothing wrong with that. You know, Mario Kart World is doing something different, and I happen to like it. And
this is what I've been asking for forever. I loved all the levels in Mario Kart 8 that weren't 3-lap courses. So this game is made for me. I love it.
And if you don't like it, you can go back to Mario
you
Kart 8.
You can still play Mario Kart 8 on the same system that you can play Mario Kart World on.
Statistically, there is a 90%. Statistically, there is an almost 100% chance that you, as a Switch 2 owner, own Mario Kart 8.
Yes,
and I mean you can play Mario Kart 64. You can play Double Dash.
Mario Kart on your Switch 2. You can play Mario Kart 64. You can play Super Mario Kart. You can play Super Circuit if you're like a some sort of criminal. But yeah, like you have a lot of options. I appreciate that sometimes games are different for its own sake. Okay, we've got one more that I want to throw on before like I'm too tired to keep going.
Yeah.
I previously asked about the flattening of characters in Serial Works with The Simpsons as the example. Comic characters like Batman, etc., can have dozens of reinventions, some good, some duds, but at least they constantly get ambitious writers to produce those books. What about the C and D listers that have been stuck with that characterization for decades because no one cares enough to reinvent them? Someone who gets a fate 10 times worse than Apu. I mean, like, I think that, like, it requires, like, a unique situation. Like, comic books end up in this unique situation where it costs basically nothing to reference an existing character, but, like, making a new version. What the hell are you playing with?
Fantasy Life.
Oh, okay.
The new one, is that any good?
Yeah, it's extremely good.
Apparently it's quite good.
Good. Good.
I would still recommend Rune Factory first, but...
Yes. Yes, but I need to hear that game while I'm playing it, because it's...
That's true.
It's great.
Yeah. But yeah, what I was going to say was, like, comics especially are in a unique position, because, like, referencing an existing character or drawing them for a couple of panels in a big event book is essentially zero cost. So, you know, if you decide you want to bring back fucking Plastic Man or whatever, like, yeah, sure, go nuts.
You should want to bring back Plastic Man. Plastic Man is great.
Yeah, I was trying to think of something, someone that no one actually likes, and I didn't think
Booster Gold.
When I got no, people like Booster Gold. I was gonna be mean and bring up the
color
the,
change boy,
Spider-Man Rain.
That's coming back too.
They'd already did.
I was going to be mean and bring up the upcoming Wonder Man TV series.
Who is Wonder Man? Why am I seeing so much Wonder Man? I did not ask for this.
Genuinely baffled that they like that series did not get shit canned. But yeah, like, you know, like it does not cost you much to like that's actually a perfect example. Putting Wonder Man in the back of a random event comic for Marvel costs them nothing. Making a Wonder Man TV series very expensive.
Millions of dollars.
Like, they said who they're casting as Wonder Man? Because I remember there was an Easter egg in one of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies.
Yahya Abdul-Mateen II.
That's not the person who was in the Easter egg in the second Guardians of the Galaxy movie. Okay.
But, yeah, it's just one of those situations where it's like, why Wonder Man? Why Wonder Man? But yeah, and that becomes the opportunity cost of, like, when you're dealing with something that costs more than opportunity cost, and with a much higher opportunity cost with something like a TV show or a video game, it just gets hard to justify, like, okay, we're gonna reinvent this character who has never been popular. Like, that's a hard sell. So, you know, those characters end up being background cannon fodder. Like, you know, fucking Darkseid is back and he has stabbed someone in the face. I'm mixing my comics up here, but that's the broad point. It's that ultimately those characters end up being like they are texture to the universe as opposed to being characters. And I mean, it's sad, but it's just the logistics of opportunity cost at that point. Again, easy to throw them in the background when all you have to do is write some lines in the script and draw them, or maybe not even write lines in the script. Maybe you just like instruct, like put them in the crowd shot. But you know, the other. You know, when it's something that like you end up requiring like a series of perverse miracles to make certain things happen, and one of them is that kind of thing. One of the big deals is just going to be you need someone who has an idea, has the clout to make that idea happen, and you know, a company with the kind of money necessary that is doing well enough that they're willing to, like, for the sake of that creative's clout, make this all happen. And at no point during the process does it become like a situation where it's like, maybe that person's time is better spent elsewhere. And so what I'm saying is that it took a series of perverse miracles for Wonder Man to come out. But yeah, I think that's about as much as I've got brain power for the night. Do you want to tell me what I can read as I go to bed?
Wow.
Well, how about some folktales?
Oh, I love folktales.
Nice, short, easy to digest, all about animals. In fact, so for your reading pleasure, first we have Tanuki is a Teapot, Japanese folktales. Retold and illustrated by yours truly here. Just me illustrated because I could. You know, it's kind of fun.
Nice.
Yeah, my daughters will occasionally drag this book out and make me read one or more stories out of it. It's fun.
That means it's a success.
Yeah. I mean, the shorter ones, the one that's an adaptation of an old kabuki play, their attention span does not run that long.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah. Some of the other stories, it's all fun and games. And so, yeah, so Tanuki is a Teapot, Japanese folktales all about animals by Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu, because yay, pen names. And going on from that, for something a bit more modern, we have a lit RPG in the Metroidvania style, which apparently is not that common, and you'd think that it'd be doing better, but it's, yeah. Marketing is hard. So yes, we have Vainglorious Long is the Night, which again is a Metroidvania RPG with a very strong B-movie aesthetic and just all sorts of random like fun localization issues that can come with that. So again, the entire point of this genre is that somebody is living either in the real world that has been gamified or somehow is actually inside a game, and you know, authorial vision or the source material is a factor, as is whether or not the original source material was properly translated in the first place. So yeah, that's why the book's description does mention that one of the greatest one of the greatest enemies is ludonarrative dissonance. Because I get it's just such a fun word to use, ludonarrative. And of course, ever and always, we have Princesses of the Pizza Parlor, which I know Wheel saw this on Ghost Sky, but I do have an author's copy of the fourth collection, with paperback, which this paperback will be available at the end of the month for actual sale, but honestly, all of the ebooks comprising it have been on for sale for months or years at this point. So, yeah, it's just go check it out. I am almost ready to put out the fifth side story. So, ever and onwards towards surpassing War and Peace in total length.
Yay!
We will defeat war.
In peace.
What about peace? Gotta defeat
the peace too.
I can say.
Yeah, well, peace is even worse. It's a little bitch defeat. Oh yeah, but, yeah. So that's those are all under Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu. Working on some stuff under a different pen name. Might mention that at some point, but getting there. So anyway, thank you.
Yeah. Give it a look. I demand it.
I demand it. Do it. Do it now.
Let's see. Joe, where can we find you?
All right. So I have my own Twitch and YouTube channels under Smoke and Joe Gamer. I also have a Blue Sky account you can follow me on. I'm supposed to be doing my own streams on Saturdays at the moment, but I skipped last Saturday. I'm no longer doing Wednesdays. I've been live streaming for RP Gamer for JRPG July. So that's Tuesday night, Thursday night on twitch.tv/RPGamer. That's 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. Eastern time. So I've been streaming Visions of Mana, and you know, you should check out RP Gamer for JRPG July and reviews and other things. I'm officially a staff member again, so that's
one
cool.
One of us.
Yeah, and so I thought I was going to be doing my own JRPG July event as well, but we'll see. I haven't really felt up to it. I can tell you that June was switched to June, so there were four or five live streams that made their way over to YouTube that you can check out. I'm just trying out different Switch 2 games, see how they run, see how they look, that sort of thing. And on YouTube, you know, I do various types of content. So I don't know, today I was playing one of my guitars. Maybe I'll record something and throw it up there. You know, that's something I'd like to start doing more of. And yeah, that's all I got for you.
Hooray! Let's see. As for us, you can find us when we stream at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern on Mondays, and also our Shenanigans alternative streams where we play multiplayer games and like each other less a little more each time. Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. If you would like to ask us questions, as dear friends Fireminer and Quetzalcoatl did ask today, you can jump into the RP Gamer or Ask Wheels Twitch chat during those periods and shout at us and say mean words to us, and we'll be sad, but we'll try to answer questions. You can also ask questions in the comments section under this very episode on rpgamer.com. Don't put your comments on like iTunes reviews or whatever. We don't read them. You can also ask us questions by going to the RP Gamer Discord in the podcast section. You can you can join the RP Gamer Discord by going to the communities tab on RP Gamer and clicking the invite link. It's a lovely community, whether you want to ask us questions or not, but we do so love getting questions. But otherwise, I think that about runs us out of time. So see you, Space Cowboys.
See you.
Good night.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.